Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the page, NBA page at NBC Sports. And today, it's time to talk a little Knicks basketball. They've been kind of one of the, I think, interesting but under the radar a little bit stories, just because, you know, over the bridge there's drama, and a couple other places in the league there's been so much drama this year. Bring it in. Just a guy I love, Tommy Beer, author of the What's on Tap newsletter that you should absolutely be subscribing to if you're a Knicks fan. I know, Tommy, you were desperate to talk about the place of ladders in post-game workouts by teams, but I'd rather talk Knicks if that's okay.
That's fine. I'm always down to talk ladders and Montrezl Harrell taking his ball and going home. But
yeah, I don't really want to go down that road, but I'm like, I'm not even sure what Giannis did wrong on that one. Like, you've been to games. If you've covered games, I know you have, but like, I've been to games, and I think fans get this. I can't tell you how many players work out after games. And especially if Kobe had a bad game, would go out and shoot home or road. Like, there's just, so Giannis went and shot some free throws. Anyway.
100%. Yeah. And to me, it just speaks highly of Giannis, the fact that he's a two-time MVP. A lot of times, you'll know, it'll be the rookies that didn't play. It'll be the PCD guys that get out there just to get a sweat on because they just sat for 2 hours and didn't get any workout in. But to see a two-time MVP out there, I think speaks to how much he wants to improve. And is one of the reasons why I love the guy. And he's just everything that's right with the NBA, in my opinion.
Yeah, so the Knicks, 9-9 after a nice win on Monday night, sit tech as the 8 seed in the East. And if you'd said to me before the season starts, they're 500, they're sitting at the 8th seed in the East, I'd be, well, I'm a little surprised. I thought the East would be deeper than that, but still, that's not wildly out of character for where I kind of thought they might land. But it doesn't feel that way, does it, Tommy?
It doesn't. I think, you know, because you just, if we track back 8 days ago, they were blown out by the Thunder at the Garden, gave up 145 points. 2 days prior, they were no show against the Nets in Brooklyn. They had a bad game where they gave up a bunch of threes against the Celtics there, and then they lost to the Hawks. So it was like 4 days and like eight, you know, in a week span. Four games that they didn't play well. Defensively, they looked a mess. And they were about to embark on what was considered an extremely difficult West Coast road trip. Five games, seven nights, two sets of back-to-backs. They ended up getting a little lucky. Jokic misses the Denver game with COVID. So they get a little benefit there. But to their credit, they survived. Not only survived the road trip, because they would have signed up for 2-3. You figure they win 3 out of 2, head back home 9-9, and as you mentioned, are kind of right in the thick of things in the East. But that, as you know, it has a lot more to do with how funky and weird the Bulls 3 games under .500, the Heat shockingly 4 games under .500, the Nets and Sixers both in that same range. So you assume that those teams will eventually start to rise a little bit, whereas the Knicks will start to fall. But yeah, I mean, if you would ask me at the start of the season, 18 games after this 5-game road trip, I think a lot of fans would have probably signed up for 9-9, and I think the Vegas had their number at like 39.5. So right around a 500 team, and so I don't think this is shocking one way or the other. That's where they sit after 18 contests.
No, I think, like you said, it's what's a little weird about it is, or what's, and I think what's good for them is, I don't want to say nobody's run away with the East, because like Boston, Milwaukee, and obviously Cleveland's playing well, but after that, it really, like, I don't know that Indiana can sustain this. I don't really trust the Wizards. I'm not as high on the Hawks as everybody else, but the Hawks are like, but Toronto, you know, they've struggled. I don't know. Philadelphia's really banged up right now, so they're going to stumble for a while. Do you trust Brooklyn? I still don't trust Brooklyn.
No.
So it's like, I still feel like that there's room for, let me put this better ways, opportunity in there. But to take advantage of that, they had to start getting some stops. Like, the defense, Tommy, has just been awful.
It has been. A real important aspect of that is the three-point defense. They're giving up a ton of wide-open threes. A lot of it has to do with their scheme, kind of their switching top of the key, pick and rolls, and dropping down into the paint. Some of it has to do with teams knocking down three-pointers, which is to be expected, in an up-and-down season. But, yeah, they do need to improve defensively. And I think you may see an increase with a player that kind of announced his return to form last night, and Quentin Grimes got the start with Cam Reddish sidelined and Fournier still out of the rotation. He's probably the team's most effective two-way player if and when he's healthy, because he can really get after you defensively. He guarded Devin Booker in the Phoenix game and slowed down Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, playing at an incredible level. He scored 30 points last night, but he did a good job of staying in front of him. So he gives the Knicks a little bit of a higher defensive upside. Mitchell Robinson's been out for a while, their best interior defender. Although Sims and Hartenstein certainly can hold their own interior defensively. So that's actually one position where the Knicks could deal with an injury. But yes, all things considered, as well as Brunson's played offensively, and obviously we'll talk about him, and he's been great, make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
But he has been, he has a tough time staying in front of guys. He's a tough time, taller players can shoot over him, can typically penetrate into the paint, and that's been kind of the problem. The Knicks perimeter guys getting beat to allowing other, opposing players to get their foot in the paint, and then they kick out for those open threes. So that's kind of been a major issue for New York.
And is this partially just personnel in the scheme, and that, like, Julius Randle is not a great, he's not going to be able to defend for you out on the perimeter. There's, like you said, Grimes, the untradeable Grimes, is a good defender. Obviously Robinson in the paint is a quality rim protector, and Hartenstein's, the Clippers were not, they were not thrilled to see him go. And they knew they couldn't afford to keep him, even, well, I suppose Ballmer can afford technically anything, but like, they knew they weren't going to be able to keep him, but they also knew like what they were losing. They were pained, but I could tell you just going to their games and talking to their people that they were pained by that one.
Yeah. I thought Hartenstein was one of the better value contracts of the summer.
Yes.
Year, $16 million for the Knicks. And he has definitely provided immediate dividends. I think the Knicks were hoping he'd be a little bit more consistent from three. Obviously a very small sample size with the Clippers, but early in his career, during his stints with the G League, during his days in Houston, he was, willing and able to take and make some three pointers, that really hasn't come together yet this season. I think they kind of envisioned him as a bit of a stretch five. But we shoot below 20% this season. So, hasn't worked out as well. But as you know, and as the Clippers certainly know, a great facilitator. And I still think the Knicks haven't completely unlocked the ways in which he can benefit the team. I don't think they're giving him enough high post touches where he can kind of, play that Draymond role where it's a pick and roll. He catches the ball, top of the key, and can fire to either corner or take it to the basket, hit a guy cutting, things along those lines. So I still think there's more upside there that they have to tap into.
I agree. I think that he's somebody, I think that he'll figure it out. He's such a versatile player, but on the bigger picture, it just still feels like they don't really have the defenders for the scheme they want to run. But not that I'm the expert who could tell you exactly what they should be running, but it feels like they've got a couple of good defenders, but it's kind of easy to find the, like you said, to exploit a Brunson, to exploit a Randle in that defensive system.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the reason why I think a lot of teams thought, why a lot of pundits thought they'd be a 500 team, why a lot, why Vegas thought they'd be around a 500 team, why a lot of fans figured they'd probably be a 500 team, because on nights they'll put up plenty of points, but they'll have a tough time keeping folks out of the paint. Other nights they'll have a tough time knocking down shots, and scoring enough. I think Brunson kind of solidifies their offensive efficiency, you know, but there's going to be nights when Randall and Barrett are taking, 15 to 20 shots a night. Those guys aren't high efficiency players. So you can have, they're going to go through streaks and cold spells where that's an issue. So yeah, all those things factored in, is a reason why they're kind of why I think most folks figured they'd be middling around 500. And that's it's good in some ways that'll keep the fan base somewhat interested. But if we're going to look at the big picture, I think it may be fool's gold in a sense, because the Knicks are on a trajectory where they're probably headed towards the dreaded, 11th seed. 10th seed in the Eastern Conference. For years, for the last three decades, the last place you wanted to be was ninth seed in your conference.
Yeah.
Is that, you're not good enough to compete. You're just missing the playoffs. Now it's a little bit more complicated because you can say you made the play-in even though you lose one game and then your season's over. But being in that 11 to 12, that 9 to 12 range, as you know, means you're not good enough to compete. You're not bad enough to get a high lottery pick, which obviously this year is something that teams are going to covet. So I think as long as the Knicks got off to a decent start, looks like Tibbs' seat was hot for a little bit, has cooled off a little bit now that he's, now that they won 3 of 2 on the West Coast, kind of tells you where expectations are. But because of that, I think they're going to hang around 500 all season, and they're going to hang in that purgatory where they've been, for the better part of two decades. And so how, does that benefit them long term is obviously a question, a deeper question. But I think that's kind of where we see this thing headed going forward over the next few months.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You brought this up, so I'll jump here. It was farther down in my notes, but how hot is the Tom Thibodeau seat? And is it just me? Because it feels like that's a big card for Leon Rose to play, because that was his guy, right? Like that was the guy he wanted. That's the guy he brought in to change the culture. I feel like once he plays that card, a lot of the spotlight shifts to Rose, no matter who comes in as coach.
Bingo. And I think that's a major reason why Tibbs is going to hold out on firing Tibbs until he absolutely has no other choice. Because once Rose is fired, once he's thrown overboard and fans are, because there's a large contingent of the fan base that has wanted him fired since the middle of last year, despite the fact that he was coach of the year and, landed the 4 seed, et cetera, during the bubble year. But Leon Rose understands once Tibbs is gone, then the focus, then the spotlight, then the headlines become when they focus on the roster itself, the lack of a superstar. Rose was brought into, so it's, it's a weird situation. But I, again, I think, you know, Tibbs will get as long a rope as he needs to, you know, because Rose understands the implications once Tibbs is out of the picture.
You said Rose was brought in to bring in a superstar. Jalen Brunson, not a superstar, but I mean, a quality player. And I think, is it safe to say he's kind of been what you'd expect? Like he certainly hasn't been bad.
No. Yeah. If anything, he's been even a little better. I think fans had some high expectations, but he's just watching him night in, night out. You know, we got a taste of it over the second half of last season when Luke was out for a while. And obviously in the playoffs, those first three games he really played like a man possessed. But just, you know, 20 points per, over 20 points per game, nearly 50% from the floor, 6.7 assists, only 1.7 turnovers. So really high assist to turnover ratio, scoring plenty, really efficient offense as we expect from him. Surprisingly, he's shooting below 30% from three. So you figure once those shots go down, that'll only increase his, that'll only increase his efficiency and his scoring output and maybe even open up some additional driving lanes. I was actually digging into the numbers for a post this afternoon, and just what he's done, what he's been able to do for a guy that's basically 6 foot. You know, they list him at 6'2". If he's 6'2", then I'm 6'5".
You are one of the best dunkers in the media. I'm just saying, okay.
I'll make my free throws, but Duncan's never been my. the only players that have driven the basket more frequently this season than Brunson are SGA, Morant, and Luka Doncic. Coming into 2023, coming into the season, no guard had averaged more than 20 points per game while knocking down fewer than 1.3 three-pointers. That was Westbrook in 2019-20. Brunson's averaging 20.8, and with just 1.2 made threes. One other stat that I found interesting from last night's game, just kind of give you a sense of what Brunson's been doing. He was 1 from 6 from the floor from beyond the arc last night in their win over the Thunder, but made 13 straight 2-point baskets. He was 13 for 13.
Wow.
Missed a floater, with under a minute left. But he's just the fourth player in NBA history to shoot over 90% from 2-point range on at least 14 attempts, while also dishing out 9 assists in the same game. Other three guys are Gary Payton, Kyrie Irving, and Wilt Chamberlain. So that just, you know, that's what he does. He's a very unique player. And just as important as what the offensive, the way he sets the offense up and just kind of gets the Knicks set, you know, in their sets. He's a leader on the floor, consistently works hard, has been by far and away the Knicks' best player. And when your best player is a team-first guy that accepts responsibility when the team loses, praises other when the team is successful, just everything you want in a point guard, in a floor leader, in a captain, in a general, you know, all those intangible things. And that's exactly what Brunson brings to the table. So it's difficult to win, to be a really good team. If he's your best player, you're not going to be a championship contender. But if and when, I feel like we've been saying that forever, but if and when the Knicks get a great player, you know, one of those, if they can get a top five guy, a top 10 guy, Brunson's the perfect Robin to that Batman, that kind of second banana to that stud, if they can ever get their hands on one.
Yeah. And I think you can see in Dallas how much they miss him right now. I got to say, just watching the Knicks too, compared to last year, the level of just competence running the offense, right? Like just getting into sets properly, you know, in a timely manner, the ball going where it should is just done at a higher level, especially under pressure, especially in bigger moments. It's a much more settled offense.
100%. I mean, if you don't have a point guard in today's NBA, I mean, you know, whether that's a point guard by definition or a guy that's going to handle the ball and set up the offense, LeBron James, it would qualify that as well. But if you don't have a lead guard, someone who's going to take control of the basketball and get guys in position, last year, so often it was just boring and frustrating. 8 seconds left in the shot clock, you know, Randall catches the ball, you know, 17 feet out, takes three dribbles, jab steps, shoots a fadeaway, misses. You know, next time down the floor, RJ Barrett dribbles into three guys in the paint, forces a contested off balance, you know, floater, misses. So it just happened time and time again. Again, Randall, just as much as Brunson creates his own number of shots in that kind of mid range, he actually has 65 made field goals in the paint, non-restricted area. No other player in the NBA has more than 50 this season. Gilgeous Alexander second in the NBA with 50 such shots. Brunson has 65 in the paint in the non-restricted area. When he gets his foot in the paint, it not only creates scoring opportunities for himself, he's countless times dished out to other Knicks for wide open looks. Knicks are right around the middle of the league in terms of over 16 uncontested three-pointers per game, but they're shooting just 34% on those. Last year they shot 40%. So there's some reason for optimism. As solid as the Knicks have been offensively, there's reasons to believe that that could actually increase once they start knocking down open threes. So again, there's Knicks fans have reason to be hopeful, but they, as you noted early on, they need to improve defensively, whether that's by scheme, whether that's by playing quickly more, Grimes more, Mitch Robinson getting healthy. Those are things that they kind of need to implement as well.
I'm hesitant to bring this up, but how is the fan base dealing with the fact that Donovan Mitchell's just been on fire?
That's a good question. I think it's kind of expected. Listen, you know, you kind of knew what they were hopefully getting, and what the Cavs got has been kind of, you know, what they. I think everyone was aware that that situation in Utah needed to be broken up, and just as well as that statistically, offensively, he's been playing, he's been much better defensively too, been far more engaged.
He's been trying defensively.
Exactly. He's making an effort, which tends to help. I thought they would probably be more focused on it, surprisingly, and I think the kind of national view was that Knicks fans were devastated, you know, and they were going to riot in the streets if they didn't get Donovan Mitchell. But I think Knicks fans, to their credit, understood that there were at some point you had to draw a line in the sand. I think it ended up being a lot closer, you know, to actually getting the deal done. But they didn't. Knicks fans really have a strong attachment to Obi and Grimes and IQ. So they were, I would say, like 75% of the fan base was content and not making and not giving up too much what they thought was too much for too much for Mitchell. In retrospect. There's just, you know, talk today. Athletic had a report that that they may consider, and some other, and I think Shams had it last week as well, that IQ may be on the trade block. The issue is at some point they have to consolidate these young players. IQ is going to be extension eligible next summer. Obi Toppin's going to be extension eligible. They have all these draft picks that, you know, if they don't trade them, they're going to have to find roster spots for them. At some point, you have to consolidate those assets into a player. And if one doesn't become available, what do you do? In retrospect, it probably was the right decision. They probably should have done what it needed, because they were so close, whether it's on the 2-yard line or the 7-yard line, to pushing the ball into the goal line and getting Donovan Mitchell. Having Mitchell and Brunson in the same backcourt obviously has the defensive issues, as we discussed, but it's not like they're a defensive juggernaut anyway. They probably should have gotten that deal done, but now they have to pivot, and it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out.
I'm glad you brought up that they've kind of got to decide what they're going to do with Toppin, decide what you're going to do with Quickly, and are you going to trade him for more assets? I guess that's ultimately the goal. I like my thought on the Mitchell thing ultimately, and I think if I remember right, you were thinking the same way, which was, all right, if you're not going all in here, that's a reasonable point.
Yes.
But you've got to eventually. So what really matters is what's next.
Mm-hmm.
I like to me that was the next. It's like, all right, if that's not your call, that's fine. But what are you? At some point, you've got to go in. At some point, you've got to put the chips on the table.
Yeah, 100%. And the issue with letting Mitchell slide by is now you're beholden on somebody else being unhappy, an owner getting anxious, not willing to pay a guy max money, a GM. In other words, it's rare that a player like Mitchell, 25, 3 years left on his contract, yeah, three-time All-Star, he's a kid from New York. He checks so many boxes. Now you gotta, you know, does Cat get unhappy in Minnesota? There's something else. There's just a lot more that is going to, that you have to get lucky, you know, now. And Knicks know that that Leon Rose is desperate, so they're going to charge. I think Ainge, you know, was trying to give them, you know, trying to apply a New York tax, 5% or 10% more. There's all those things that factor in here, but they kind of box themselves into a corner, as evidenced by the fact that they're reportedly considering trading Emmanuel Quickley, who was one of the guys that they didn't want to trade in the Donovan Mitchell deal. Eventually, they have to decide, what to do. Reality is they had to attach, draft picks to Alex Burks and Nerlens Noel and Kemba Walker to get rid of them. They're going to have to attach a draft pick to Evan Fournier to get rid of him. They may have to attach a draft pick to Julius Randle. So while Rose deserves credit for being patient, he hasn't traded any future first rounders, which the Knicks were guilty of for so long. They've done relatively well late in the draft with Quickley and Grimes, and Obi Toppin seems to be rounding into shape. But again, with Obi Toppin, he's playing behind Randall. There's just not enough there. If the goal is to win a championship, it's difficult to see a path forward. Unless a star decides that they need to leave, which we've seen happen in the past.
Yeah,
who's that star and when it's going to be is the tricky question.
RJ Barrett's off to another slow start, which feels like an annual occurrence. Is this kind of who he is now? I mean, is RJ who he is? Because I think he's scoring well in the paint, but it doesn't feel consistent.
No, it's not consistent. And he was really, inefficient at the start of last season, as you know, the start of his rookie season. So there is a trend. To his credit, the end of last season, he was up over, the second post All-Star break, he's up over 24 points a game, shooting close to 40% from three, above 45% from the floor. So we did that for a good 25 game stretch. But he also has these stretches for two, three weeks, 10, 15 games where he'll just be awful. Prior to knocking down three 3-pointers last night, he was 1 of 26 from 3-point territory in the Knicks' previous four games. And he's a high volume guy. What you like about RJ Barrett is that he doesn't let it affect his effort. You know, doesn't let it affect his intensity. Plays hard, still says the right things to the media, doesn't blame others, doesn't finger point. Not a great defender, not as fluid as you like, for a perimeter 3-and-D type wing. Shows some sign, has length and height that he uses to advantage. Not a net negative on the defensive end of the floor. But he does need to be far more efficient, needs to knock down his free throws, which he's done to a certain extent. Has had some hiccups at the line at various points. Knicks fans go through these swings where they're way too high on RJ Barrett. He's going to be the next, Devin Booker or the next great wing in the NBA, Paul George type player. And then he has 2 weeks and they, let's trade him. I can't believe we didn't get up for him. We gave him an extension. I think he's properly valued. Knicks gave him $100 million extension, which, at the time seemed like a lot, but when you factor in the rising cap,
It's not a movable. If you need to, it's a movable contract because he brings value. And I think the other thing that has to keep you, if you're a Knicks fan, optimistic is, kid's a worker. He puts it in, man. He puts in the work. And I don't know how that's going to pay off because a lot of guys do that in the league and it doesn't necessarily always pay off. But he's certainly trying. Like, it's not like he's coasting to this.
100%. And he adjusts mid-game. You'll see him, like last night, he realized he wasn't hot from 3-point, that he's been struggling with his jumper. He attacks the basket. He's a smart guy, has a good IQ, handles New York. There's a lot to be said for that. And he's also 22 years old. Let's remember, this would have been, he would have been a senior at Duke last season. He's handled the New York spotlight very, very well since being the third overall pick. He's the highest draft pick, since I think it was Kenny Kenny Walker in 1985. Wow. So, you know, there's and certain folks can't handle the pressure and the intense spotlight that comes with New York. There's a point guard across the river, you know, who falls into that category. But yeah, so again, he's a movable piece. He's a good play, you know, he's a good teammate. All the guys on the team like him. And again, yeah, to your point, with the rising, especially with the rising salary cap, he's going to be like 17%, 18% yeah. cap, and you know, the third and fourth years of that contract. So it's not a bad deal by any means. If they have it, you know, it's definitely an asset they can move if and when the time comes and when the next star, you know, kind of hits the block.
I feel like it's kind of the same with Julius Randle. Except you're going to, it's not going to be quite as easy to move him if it comes to that, but you know, he had the breakout year where his basically is the difference just his threes fell for a year. Like, did anything else much change?
Not really. When you look at his career, that was the outlier year. He shot over 41% from three on a high volume percentage of three pointers. You know, last year he shot, you know, 31%. The year prior, I think it was 29%. This year, you know, low 30s. But yeah, even last year in a bad year, he was 20-10-5. You know, he's been a solid distributor, you know, decent rebound, you know, good rebounder, you know, for a non-center, for a four, you know, scores, obviously needs to improve his efficiency. A lot of that has to do with the three-pointer dropping. But I think the Knicks should make a move prior to the deadline, and that move should be doing everything in their power to move on from Randle, because it's not even his efficiency, and it's not so much, you know, his defensive ineptitude, because there's a lot of games where he takes plays off. You know, just he doesn't see the floor well from a defensive standpoint. But worse than that is his effort waxes and wanes. It seems like when his shot is falling, he'll give a little bit more intensive effort, get down on the floor for loose balls. And to his credit, he's been a little bit better this year. But the last winter, it was so bad for a long stretch. Tibbs continued to defend him, however, despite, you know, calling out others publicly. The thought is that Tibbs felt he couldn't handle, you know, kind of public, you know, questioning from the coaching staff. But with Obi Toppin behind him, and there's a disconnect between the fan base and Randle ever since the kind of the thumbs down. And Knicks fans are in tune. They see the lack of effort. They see the lack of, you know, hustling back on defense, not boxing out, not helping the helper, things like that. You know, and especially with today's day and age, with all the great content you can get from a couple different producers, that there's just enough evidence there that Randle is not the guy that you want to build a franchise around. You don't want him to be your highest paid player. You don't want him to be your leading field goal attempt, you know, your leading shooter. So it's best for the team to move on. Ideally, you'd prefer not to have to attach draft pick to him. But at some point in time, you have to decide what you have in Obi Toppin. And in order to do that, you have to give him a starting role in 30 minutes a night. And that's not going to happen with Randle in the picture. So I think, you know, Obi's much closer to the timeline of RJ Barrett, Quentin Grimes, Jalen Brunson, you know, kind of that core going forward. So ideally, the Knicks will be able to find a taker for Randle, you know, prior to the deadline, because they have to move on from him sooner rather than later.
Do you think Randle could be option number three on a contending team, or is he just the lack of effort and defense too much in the way?
I think he can be if he ever embraced that role, I think it'd be great, you know, as a six man, you know, where he could be the center, you know, provide an offensive spark and just come in, look for his offense. He doesn't have to worry so much, but he's a decent facilitator. And if he was in a winning environment, a winning situation, a lot of that, you know, I think he kind of crumbled under the pressure of being the guy in New York City, you know, for that one season after expectations were ratcheted up after they were the four seed. He just couldn't handle that for whatever reason. And again, some guys just aren't built for that. But if he was, you know, if he played on the, you know, somehow got to the Lakers and played alongside AD and LeBron and Westbrook was catching all the fire when the team did bad, and he could just kind of float under the radar. I think he's kind of like a Christian Christian Wood type guy, okay. In the right situation, like if he, you know, lands in Dallas, you know, can put up solid points per minute, and just kind of find that role. But again, you know, the same could be said of Westbrook, and he wasn't having it. Whereas certain players, you know, are willing to kind of embrace it and run with that route. So it'll be fascinating to see. He has the ability and the skill set to make a major impact if he's locked in.
Yeah, Christian Wood thinks Christian Wood should be used more as well. So
correct, and they're similar in that respect, you know.
One of the things that really worked for this team last year was the bench play, particularly the bench guard play of Quickley and Rose. Rose isn't quite the same this year after the ankle surgery, right? And the bench in general just hasn't been the same.
He is not. Yeah, Rose hasn't looked good. He's had some flashes, but just it seems like he lost maybe a half a step. And for a guy like Rose, who's so dependent on his athleticism and quickness, not unsurprisingly, it's taken an impact on his game. Looked like he was kind of trending in the right direction before he hurt his toe the other night. Quickley's kind of been up and down, but to his credit, Quickley's been the team's best perimeter defender. So that's encouraging. You know, he's really been improved year to year on the defensive end. Was 3 of 4 from downtown last night. He'd have been in a slump, shooting slump as well. So that's certainly a piece, I think, that is part of a foundational piece. Like, I think he's built to be like a 6th, 7th man. I think he's a good NBA rotation player. A lot of their early season struggles is when also coincided with Evan Fournier being switched to the bench. And Fournier is another guy that's just having, you know, very, very difficult for him to stay in front of the quicker perimeter guard. So he was attacked constantly. So that kind of hurt their net rating for a while there as well.
You talked about, you know, possibly looking for a Julius Randle trade. We discussed, you know, as Shams had at the Athletic had possible Quickley and Derrick Rose came up. I don't know Rose, with the money Rose makes and where he is right now with his game, I'm not sure that there's a trade for him, but you know, they'll at least sniff around. Do you feel like they're going to make a move at the deadline?
I do. Again, I think if for no other reason, for the sake of making a move, unfortunately, I think that's going to factor into the equation here, because you know, I think there's a lot of pressure on the Knicks to show that they have a plan, that they have a direction. Because if you don't, again, you know, circling back to what we talked about, if you're not going to get Mitchell, okay, so what's next? If they don't make a trade at the deadline, who are they going to move this offseason? I think Randall's been playing at a relatively high level, and there's a chance for regression at some point. So I think they should strike while the iron hot if another team's willing to take on his contract. So I think that they will be motivated to do so. And also, you know, to our earlier point, at some point you got to consolidate the roster and consolidate those draft picks. You know, there's only so many roster spots they have. They have a bunch of protected first round picks. It's doubtful or dubious as to how valuable those are. When you got picks like the, you know, coming from the Bucks, you know, you got top 18, top 16 protected picks from the Pistons, and the Hawks as well. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out, but I think the Knicks will be active. You know, they're not going to give anybody away. They're not going to, you know, trade somebody for, you know, 25 cents on the dollar just to make a trade, but I definitely think they will be active, to just try to shake things up here. And, you know, obviously, of course, a lot depends what happens over the next 2 months, because the Victor Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, you know, sweepstakes is a reality. If they're 7 games under 500 the first week in February, and they're closer to the, you know, the 14th seed in the conference than the 8th seed in the conference, it would certainly behoove the team, big picture wise, to make a run at a high lottery pick. Would Tibbs be accepting of that? No. Would that mean that Tibbs would have to be fired in order for them to kind of clean house? Yes, probably. But that's the issue with Tibbs. And I wrote about this earlier this season as well. He's a win now coach, and the Knicks are a win later franchise. So there's a disconnect there. Probably the best course of action for this team would be to deal Randle, put Obi in the starting lineup, and see what you have in Obi, IQ, Grimes, Cam Reddish, Brunson, Barrett. See what those guys can do. If you lose some games, so be it. You increase your chances at a high lottery in a very good draft.
Yeah, because it's not just those two. It's the Amy, you know, Thompson twins and everybody else. And with the flattened lottery odds, if you're the, I don't know, eighth worst record, ninth worst record, like it's not, your chances is still legitimate of getting up into the top two or three and getting a really good player.
100%. And the Jazz are five games over 500. The Pacers are four games over 500. You know, there's some, you know, the Pistons and the Hornets and the Rockets are going to be down there, but who's that fourth worst team in the NBA? Who's the fifth worst team in the NBA? If you can get into one of those slots, like there's a, you know, you may be able to win 29 games and still have the fifth worst record in the NBA, which is kind of a weird thing.
Mostly. Yeah. By the way, having been out here in LA and seen the Pistons and Spurs in person, yeah, they'll be there.
Yes.
The Spurs, I mean, look, I love Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell. They're just bad. And the Pistons, it's just been unfortunate with Cade now out and everything. Like that. I think fully healthy, if Cade and Isaiah Stewart are playing, like they're I don't know, dangerous is the wrong word, but like they're not an easy out every night. But right now, they're really.
You don't want Corey Joseph playing 30 minutes a night.
No, exactly. They made the Clipper offense look good, and it's hard. The Clipper offense look good right now. I think that's it. I think that, look, I keep looking at this team thinking, well, I don't know if these pieces fit together and you can play around with it. But ultimately, like you said, it's kind of a win later situation. Until they go and get said superstar, it's hard to know exactly what everything around it looks like.
Yeah, and it's odd because they're building for a theoretical player. You know, it's you understand Leon Rose's hesitancy to, you know, commit to tanking, because if you head in that direction, you know, folks will say Knick fans don't want to, you know, aren't patient enough. No, I think the fan base would be.
I think they would be. Yeah,
but the issue is, does that preclude you from the next superstar that demands a trade? Accepting a trade to the Knicks or looking for a trade to the Knicks because they're so bad and so far away from contention. You know, if you don't win the lottery, that's kind of the fine line that they're walking. So the one argument you could make for accepting, quote unquote, you know, being in that purgatory of the ninth through the 12th seed is, at least if you look like you're trending in the right direction and you're winning 39 games, but you have a young roster and you're on the cusp of potentially becoming a top four team, that's the selling point to that next superstar. Hey, come join us. You'll live in the capital of the world, and you're the guy that puts us over the top. Whereas if you're the 14th seed and you have a lot of future first round picks, and Scoot Henderson, yes, you know, there's some other good pieces that he could potentially be good, but why leave a decent situation to come to join a team at the start of a rebuild? So I think that's the Leon Rose's answer as to why he is unwilling to kind of start and you know, a full-fledged rebuild in New York.
Well, it's going to be an interesting trade deadline and going forward. Tommy, thank you for joining us. Where can everybody find you on Twitter, by the way?
Sure.
Well, Twitter exists.
Yes. For the next 2 weeks, before it collapses, at Tommy Beer on Twitter.
And of course, he is the author of the What's on Tap newsletter. Again, if you're a Knicks fan, you should absolutely be subscribing to that. Thank you for doing this, Tommy. I look forward to, we'll do it again down the line, man.
My pleasure, Kurt. Anytime.
And we will be back later this week with more Pro Basketball Talk podcast. Corey Robinson and I will be discussing everything around the league. So we'll see. We'll talk to you then.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.